drudgies are all gone.
I'm not going to hit you with this.
But no, just with the drudgies.
There's a marijuana committee over here.
He looks like he's flinching.
Wait a minute, you asked me to go find him. I went yesterday. They're out here debating marijuana in the hallway for.
Everybody, welcome to the Thursday, March 12th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules. We have quite a few bills posted, and we're going to just take them in the order that they are on our agenda. So I will start by opening a public hearing and work session on Senate Joint Resolution 4. And Erin, could you tell us about this one?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. SJR 4 comes to you from your Senate Judiciary Committee on a 5-0 vote. It proposes amendment to Oregon Constitution to prohibit legislative assembly or the people from fixing age for mandatory retirement of judges. It refers the amendment to voters at the next regular general election. You do have a -1 amendment. The -1 amendment clarifies that the amendment proposed in SJR 4 affects judges elected on or after amendment is approved by voters in 2016, or if it is approved by voters in 2016. We have a no revenue impact statement. You have a -1 fiscal statement that was issued.
Okay, do we have anyone to testify? We do. We have Rochelle Altman and Josh Nasby. If you'd both like to come forward.
They don't look like they're old enough to retire. Since you don't look
they're
old look, enough.
They're looking ahead.
Josh is going to be a judge, boy.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Whoever wants to go first, go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, my name is Rochelle Altman, and I serve as Legislative Director for the Secretary of State's office. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of SJR 4 today. This resolution amends Article 7, Section 1A of Oregon's Constitution to repeal a provision that requires, without exception, any judge to retire at the end of the calendar year in which he or she turns 75 years old. SJR 4 also amends Section 1A of the Constitution of that provision to prohibit the legislature or the people from fixing any age for mandatory retirement of judges, and that's something that's currently allowed. I'd like to note that ORS 1.310 already provides that a judge's inability to perform judicial duties may serve as the basis for involuntary retirement of judges. That provision provides a detailed process by which a judge can be involuntarily retired under certain circumstances. That statutory provision would remain consistent with the Constitution should SJR 4 become law. Oregon has repeatedly seen judges forced to retire at age 75, and in some cases, attorneys have been barred from serving on the bench. Despite the fact that they have decades of experience and knowledge that would allow them to provide valuable judicial service. Secretary Atkins believes that mandatory age-based retirement is an unfair anachronism for judges, and she urges your support of SJR 4. As for the fiscal impact of SJR 4, SJR 4 refers the resolution's proposed constitutional amendment to the people at the next general election. This means that the resolution's fiscal impact to the Secretary of State's office is the state's portion of incremental costs for producing a voter's pamphlet for this ballot measure. The Secretary of State's office prepares and distributes the voter's pamphlet and collects a $500 filing fee for each argument filed in support or in opposition to a ballot measure. Typically, these filing fees cover slightly more than half of the cost for the Secretary of State to produce and distribute the voter's pamphlet, and then the remaining costs are paid for out of the general fund. At this time, the fiscal impact of SJR 4 is indeterminate. The cost of producing and distributing the voter's pamphlet is determined by the total number of initiatives and legislative referrals placed on the ballot, and by the number of arguments filed in support of or in opposition to ballot measures. And of course, this information will not be known until after election filing deadlines. Finally, I would just like to say a few brief words about the -1 amendments. These amendments are respectfully requested by the Secretary of State's office and the Oregon Judicial Department The Dash 1 amendments would make it clear that SJR4's constitutional amendment would apply not only to future judges, but also to judges currently serving at the time that SJR4 would become law, if approved by the people. So thank you again for this opportunity to testify in support of SJR4, and I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, I think we'll hold questions until we've heard from both witnesses.
Oh,
then we'll
sorry
open
about
it up.
That.
If that's okay.
It's a bipartisan question. He's going to ask it for both.
Okay, great. Josh, want to go ahead?
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. My name is Josh Nasby. I'm with the Oregon Judicial Department. The Judicial Department is neutral on SJR4. We're happy to comply with whatever the appropriate law is. I'm here today because in the printed resolution, there's language, and specifically I'm looking at lines 16 and 17 of the resolution. That raises a question about whether or not the proposal, if enacted, would apply to currently sitting judges. So working with the Secretary of State's office and Legislative Counsel's office, we drafted the Dash 1 amendments, which clarify that the constitutional amendment proposed in the resolution applies to all judges who hold office on or after. So a sitting judge who was elected last year, for instance, would be grandfathered in, if you will, and would continue to hold office and would not be compelled to retire at age 75.
Okay, and that completes your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Senator Beyer has a question.
Starting with, why do we want to do this?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer, there are many members of the legal community who support this because they themselves or their colleagues have had an interest in serving on the bench and have been barred from doing so due to age, or have served on the bench and have turned age 75 and felt fully confident to continue serving on the bench, that they could make valuable contributions through serving on the bench, and yet were prevented from doing so.
Follow up. The second one is the way this reads is that the assembly, legislature, or the people may not fix mandatory age of retirement. I'm not sure how you can restrict what the people can do.
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer, that would be an appropriate question for legislative council, but I believe that if the Constitution provided that the people could not do so, they of course could amend the Constitution in the future, but I believe if the Constitution provided they could not fix it, it would require an additional constitutional amendment.
We're assuming that what this would be precluding is a statutory change by the people rather than a constitutional change?
Correct. Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer, that is my understanding.
And one more.
Go ahead.
The next one, Josh, to the amendment, the date on there, the repealer, what's that all about?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Beyer. So The ambiguity surrounding to whom the amendment would apply is of limited duration. The Constitution provides judges serve for 6-year terms. So once we get past that 6-year period, it's clear folks elected after that would be subject to the amended language, would not be compelled to retire at 75. The ambiguity, again, centers around judges currently serving when this is adopted. And so the applicability provision in 1B is repealed in 6 years because it won't be needed after that point in time.
Yes, Senator Boquist.
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question of either of the witnesses. Why aren't there a bunch of judges who are asking for this?
Chair Rosenbaum,
or
Senator
attorneys.
Boquist. At the last hearing, there were, in his personal capacity, Justice Brenner from the Oregon Supreme Court testified in support, and we had there were numerous other judges who I believe filed written testimony in support, and then a number of others from the legal community testified in support.
I must have missed that.
Yeah, it was not in our committee. I think this started
In
Senate the
Judiciary
Committee, where it had its primary hearing. It's here because of the elections aspect, so it moved here from the Judiciary Committee with a 2-pass recommendation. And so it seems like this is somewhat of an anachronism. We don't have mandatory retirement. I just went to an 80th birthday party for a member of this body, still serving, And we don't have mandatory retirement ages for the legislature, for the executive branch, for any other part of government that I'm aware of. So.
We don't for the federal Supreme Court either.
And that's
maybe,
for
and maybe
sure.
We should.
That's for sure. Right. So, any other questions, members?
No, I
don't see any other questions for you, so I'll let you go. Thank you for your testimony. And we are in a work session. Members, are we ready to work this bill, or do we need more time?
I conceptually don't have a problem with the bill. I'm like Senator Byrie, the people may not file for how they worded this. I'm sure they don't like it the way it's worded. I have no problem with the change in the age that they can live mm-hmm. till they're 106. Mm-hmm. That wording's a little bit strange, that the people may not fix an age.
Uh-huh, well,
I don't know why we needed to put that, because this is a referral, right?
It is a referral, yeah. I mean, the people obviously would be voting on this, so they could reject this if they chose to do so.
If you want this to pass on the referendum, you might want to take that out.
I think so,
too. Okay, well, then it sounds to me like we need a little bit more time on this one to look it over. So we will do that and probably bring it back at a future hearing.
Again, Madam Chair, I'm fine with the concept. It's just that wording there in my district.
So why don't we?
They tar and feather people when they do.
In fact, maybe we could check with legislative counsel and see if there's some reason it was drafted that way, too. We could ask them to come in at our next hearing.
I suspect it was to preclude a statutory amendment.
Probably.
I have discomfort restricting what people can do.
Okay, so we'll take a look at it and bring it back. Okay, so I will close the public hearing and work session on Senate Joint Resolution 4 and open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2175A, which I think is our first House bill?
It is our first
right?
House bill, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2175A comes to you from your House representatives with a 59-01 excused vote. The measure deletes requirement that state agencies receiving all or part of funding from state treasurer file with Secretary of State documentation of business reasons for exceptions to next day deposit of funds with state treasurer. Deletes requirement that commodities commissions file annual financial statements with Secretary of State. Moves filing deadline forward for commodities commissions to file annual financial statement with Department of Agriculture. Declares emergency is effective upon passage. We have a no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact statement on the measure.
Okay, thank you, Erin, for that explanation. It looks like we have one person, Mary Wenger, signed up to testify, so why don't you come forward? Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. And just say your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Okay. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, my name is Mary Wenger, and I'm a deputy director with the Secretary of State's Audit Division. Thank you for the opportunity to address this House bill. This bill is basically a housekeeping bill to address unnecessary paperwork. It eliminates the requirement for state agencies to submit documentation to the Audit Division when they need to hold money for more than one day before depositing it. The bill also eliminates the requirement for commodity commissions to submit annual financial statements to the Audit Division. We receive submissions from agencies to extend the time allowed for them to make deposits with the state treasurer. The law requires that the agencies deposit monies with the state treasurer not later than one business day after receipt. Also, this is referred to as a next day deposit rule. Agencies may take longer than the next day deposit if they document a valid business reason for doing so, and they submit a copy of that reason with our office. We routinely audit the timeliness of deposits so the submissions we feel are not necessary. The second issue of the bill addresses submissions for commodity commissions. Statutes require that commodity commissions submit their annual financial statements to the Department of Agriculture and to our office as well. This bill would eliminate the requirement for the commodity commissions to submit their audit reports to the Audits Division and would shorten the submission time frame that they take to submit to the Department of Agriculture from 90 days to 30 days. We have no regular need for these reports, and the statute allows us to obtain them from Department of Ag as needed. Currently, most commodity commissions submit their reports to Department of Ag within 30 days so that the Department of Agriculture can meet its financial reporting deadlines. The department would just like the time frame in the statute to parallel common practice. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Any questions from Ms. Winger? Okay, I don't see any, so thank you again.
Okay, thank
we'll
you.
Let go. And members, we're in a work session on this bill. And Senator Farioli, Vice Chair Farioli.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 2175, House Bill 2175A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved House Bill 2175A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And do we have a volunteer to carry this bill on the floor? Senator Boquist, thank you very much for volunteering. We will have you carry on the floor, and that completes this bill. We'll close the public hearing and work session on House Bill 2175. And I think that's all of our public hearings, right? So if we want to just keep going in order here, looks like I will open a work session on Senate Bill 27, which we've heard previously, but Erin, why don't you just remind us?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 27 was originally heard on February 19th. The measure resolves certain contradictory provisions applicable to duties of county clerk. It eliminates biannual duty of county to examine financial books and papers of county clerk, clerk of county court, treasurer, and sheriff. Requires purchaser to record sheriff's certificate of execution, sale, and county clerk lien record. There is a no revenue and a no fiscal impact. We have no amendment before you today.
And members, you probably do remember that we heard this previously. It's pretty much, I hesitate to call it a housekeeping bill, but I think that really is what it is. And the county clerks testified in support of the bill. So we are ready for a motion, Vice Chair Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 27 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved Senate Bill 27 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Just for the record, yes. So everybody remembers, even though there's bold on page two, this is actually not a fee increase. This is kind of a Scribner's error that we're catching up from elsewhere. Because I'm sure someone will see that bold and say, oh, this is a fee increase, and it really is not.
Yeah.
It's a Scribner's error from elsewhere.
Yeah, good point. Thank you for that clarification. I don't see any discussion. Is there any objection? Okay, motion carries. We need a carrier on the floor, and Senator Beyer has volunteered to do that. So thank you, Senator Beyer. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 27 and open a work session on Senate Bill 28. Erin?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 28, we heard this bill again on February 19th. It's a bill that clarifies that county clerk may use voter registration record rather than physical registration card to authenticate signatures. It permits elections officer to deliver form updating information on district board members by best form of communication. You do have a -2 amendment before you today. One additional provision was asked to be added to the elections and the county clerk's technical fix bill. It clarifies that filing officer defined as Secretary of State for federal, statewide, and state senator and representative and county clerk for county, city, or district elections is responsible for releases public record information regarding challenged ballots. We have no revenue, no fiscal impact on the -2 amendment, and I believe Rob Bovette is here if you have questions, as it was brought to our attention by him and the county clerks.
Okay, would you like to come forward, maybe speak to the amendment? And when you said no revenue, no fiscal, we have impact statements.
We do. We do. Exactly. Correct. Correct, okay. Madam Chair.
Great. Hey, Madam Chair, just for Mr. Bovette, I'm marginal on this bill, so convince me.
So, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So,
that's why I volunteered the other way.
Senate Bill 28 is basically the county clerk's housekeeping bill. We've also incorporated a number of the Secretary of State's housekeeping measures as well. The -2 amendments basically take care of another issue that came up in the November election of last year, which is who releases the lists of challenged ballots. And right now, it probably is the county clerk for all elections, which makes sense for all local elections, but makes, frankly, no sense for state, federal, and legislative races. Those should be released by the Secretary of State. So we got together with the Secretary of State and worked out these -2 amendments just to make it clear who in the future is tasked with releasing these lists, as I described. And we reached agreement on that issue, and so that's what the -2s would do. As you may know, we're looking at a very big election in November of 2016, and we want to have all these little bugs worked out before we get there. Happy to answer any questions you might have.
So in other words, this amendment just substitutes the words filing officer instead of county clerk, so whoever it is
right.
for that particular election.
Correct. Madam Chair, what happened is that when we had a contested election that was bigger than a county, we had media literally running all around the state getting various pieces of documentation from 36 county clerks, and it was discoordinated, to say the least. And it just makes a whole lot more sense for the secretary to deal with statewide stuff.
Okay, thank you. Senator Beyer, what's your question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rob, the term Secretary of State for all federal and statewide elections, that's broad enough to cover issues as well as candidates?
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, yes. So that would cover statewide initiatives. That would cover federal offices, congressmen, senators, president. It will cover all the statewide elective offices. And then we've also decided that it will make most sense to have the Secretary of State release legislative races, since those are very typically cross-county lines. Usually you're dealing with at least two counties, and in many cases, a lot of counties.
Whose district could that be?
The amendment does help, because I'm one of those people that's running around in this thing. So
good. Yeah. Okay.
So the amendment I'm fine with.
Any questions? Yes, Senator Farioli.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Is there a definition of registration record? Is that an electronic record?
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, it is. It's actually defined in administrative rule, which adopts the vote-by-mail manual. And the manual tells the clerks to look at the OCVR record, which is basically the entire record related to a particular voter.
And Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator.
So the idea that the voter registration card was warehoused in the elections office has been dispelled by a memorandum and a rule by the Secretary of State directing elections officials to destroy those once they're scanned into the electronic record. What is the mechanism by which we can forensically identify or investigate a signature?
Madam Chair, Senator Furrier, I think that Clerk Robinson addressed that last time. As a practical matter, I don't think many of those cards are destroyed. They may say you can destroy them, but DAG represented, and I believe this is not uncommon, I think he warehouses them going back to arguably 100 years ago. So, I mean, we could dig those out in many cases, but in many cases they have, in fact, been scanned into OCVR. So the need to actually dig out physical documents is probably very limited.
Madam Chair, follow up?
Yes, go ahead, sir.
So on an allegation that the signature is not the original signature of the elector, would I compare the registration record to a handwriting exemplar? You know, what I'm really getting at is once the electronic registration, or once the registration card is scanned, it's bitmapped, and it becomes a less effective exemplar for comparison. So if I had a challenge to the signature of an elector, wouldn't I be required to use the registration record as the comparator?
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, exactly. And if there was a physical card that was still retained somewhere, I would argue that would be the best evidence of that. If it was destroyed, missing, or you couldn't find it for whatever reason, then obviously the best evidence would be the scanned bitmap image that would be in OCVR.
Madam Chair, I absolutely agree with you. The best forensic comparator would be the original card. But the rule is clear. It directs the elections officials to destroy them. Lots of elections officials are not doing that. That's beside the point. What I'm really concerned about is that once these things are reproduced electronically, and perhaps even from a driver's license, lifted and then inserted into the electronic record, we really don't have a physical exemplar to compare. So I worry about the idea that you'll have a signature that could be lifted from a driver's license, inserted into the registration record, and in fact the state of Oregon will have no original signature in the voter registration records. It never will have had an original signature in the voter registration records and might have to go to the Department of Motor Vehicle records to find an original if they retained those things. I think they may scan them and get rid of the originals as well. It just seems like we're getting further and further away from the signature as a piece of forensics evidence to verify identity.
And Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, I hear exactly what you're saying, but as I recall from the last time I was in DMV, and I could be mistaken, I don't know that they had me sign any physical document. I remember signing something. So your original is essentially an electronic signature. So, I mean, it seems like that's the way of...
Less and less comfortable with the whole concept of getting away from original signatures, Madam Chair.
Well, and I think, too, people can now register online. Yeah. So if you register online, you're signing electronically to begin with. That's your original signature.
It seems like more and more that the credit card things I sign now are all electronic as well. Paper right. seems to be fading away.
I know. So are the mills in my district.
Okay, any other questions? We do have the elections division in the room, too, so...
Madam Chair, some of them, if the cards were 100 years old, you'd probably be hard-pressed to find a signature left on them. Might have somewhat of one, but the ink sort of disappears over time.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Ferrioli.
If the card was 100 years old, you'd be hard-pressed to find the elector.
You wouldn't have to worry about it.
That's,
I appreciate the historical footnote, but that's not my concern.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. If they were voting, we might be a little worried.
Well, we could call Guinness, Madam Chair, if that were the case. Actually, we had allegations that centenarians were voting, and it turned out that the automated information systems defaulted to 00, so it looked like people who were voting who had registered in 1900. So
Y2K all over again.
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Ferrioli, any additional questions?
No.
Okay, thank you. Then we'll let you go. And members, we're in a work session. Are we ready to work the bill?
I am.
Okay.
I'll be done, Madam Chair. It's a protest against the 21st century technology.
Okay, sure. We'll just have somebody make the motion.
I'll be a marginal, so I'll vote yes.
Okay.
I'm only more comfortable with the second half than the first half.
Okay. Whoever.
We have to do an amendment. Yeah, we have to do an amendment
yes.
first. Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -2 amendment to SB 28.
Okay, Senator Boquist has moved the -2 amendment to Senate Bill 28. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Amendment is adopted. And Senator Boquist.
Madam Chair, I move the SB 28 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation.
Senator Boquist has moved Senate Bill 28 as amended by the -2 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion?
Other than I'm marginal, so the good senator to my right can carry it.
Or maybe the chair will take a turn.
The chair will carry it.
Okay, any other discussion? Senator Ferrioli?
None.
Should we call the roll?
I would be recorded as a no if you call the roll, ma'am.
Is there any objection?
One.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, then do we need to call the roll?
We do not. If
we do not. Okay.
We noted his objection.
Okay, so the motion carries, and the chair will volunteer to carry this on the floor. I think it's her turn, and I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 28 and open a work session on Senate Bill 29. Erin, why don't you remind us what this bill does?
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 29 was heard on February 19th. The measure establishes procedures for electing precinct committee persons, requires that one precinct committee person for every 250 electors rather than for every 500 electors who are registered in precinct, provides that write-in candidate may be eligible for election to precinct position if there is no other candidate, requires write-in candidate to accept successful write-in candidacy before primary election rather than after the election. We have a no revenue and a no fiscal impact statement before you. We have no amendment to this measure.
key. Members, you probably remember, we had a fair amount of discussion about this, and it is something that has been attempted for a while, and finally it looks like we got a version that everybody could live with. County clerks came, brought it in and came in and supported it. Yes, go ahead.
Madam Chair, just so you know, and I know all you like, you should remember, I was the odd person of all five members last time on this one. I'm still of the opinion that, you know, I'm still thinking, and I'll get scorned by my own party for this, but, you know, there's only 3,500 of these 17,000 PCP positions out there that are filled. Mm-hmm. And why the state tax dollars are subsidizing these elections is still beyond me. So I know Senator Farrelly is probably going to support the Republican Party, but, you know, for that reason, I'm a no on this one. But I do see the upgrading note. I'm just the protest no on, like, wait a minute, why are we subsidizing all of that stuff?
You just don't want to carry this one.
Senator, you're absolutely right.
Senator Beyer?
I thank you, Madam Chair. I suspect that the number is undercounted because it doesn't include all of the new independent parties' precinct slots.
Which aren't going to be filled either. And we're going to subsidize.
And I'm not sure I understand your comment, because it seems like this is going to eliminate a lot of the cost, right?
Well, I want to eliminate all of it.
But you'd like to do
the whole
thing.
I'd like to go to a caucus system.
I see. Okay.
See, that's why I'm on a limb, and I know Senator Farrell is smart enough not to talk about this. But
Madam Chair, there's nothing about this bill I could work up to even marginal passion. You know, just you know, I'll be happy to move the bill to the floor if that's your choice. Really, it just hardly rises to the level of something that would attract much interest one way or the other. So, marginal is a really good. Uh-huh. Yes, it's
marginal. We'll settle for that. Fine. Okay. Well, then, any?
I'm
other
fine with moving it. Okay. Mine is a protest vote. That, you know, why are we subsidizing this whole thing?
So. Okay, we understand.
I can spend the money someplace else.
Okay.
OPI, you know.
Well, then I will go to Senator Farrelly for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 29 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with the proviso that I will not carry this bill.
Okay. Senator Farrelly has moved.
That was a conditional motion, Madam Chair.
Senate Bill 29 to the floor with a due pass, with a lukewarm due pass recommendation. And is there any discussion on the motion?
No, I'm fine. Just note that I don't think it. Okay. For dollar purposes.
Okay, no discussion. Any objection?
So no.
One objection. Okay, motion carries. And
I think Senator Burdick wanted to carry
I
this
think
one.
I
remember she liked this.
Yes.
Senator Beyer is right. She liked this. Right. I remember that.
That'll teach her, Richard, late for a meeting. So I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 29. And open a work session on Senate Bill 292. And Erin will.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 292 was heard on February 24th. It's a bill that repeals duplicative statute regarding conflict of interest for planning commission members. We did receive a no revenue impact, and we did receive a no fiscal impact on the underlying measure. We have no amendment before you today.
Okay.
Good bill should pass. Isn't that what Derek Hitt said?
Okay. So we need a motion on this. Senator Farrelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 292 to the floor with a due pass, an unrestricted, unexpurgated, unqualified due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farrelly has moved Senate Bill 292 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion?
No.
Okay, the motion carries.
It's my turn to carry. I don't want the next one.
I thought that was an offer to carry. Down.
Oh, was it?
Are you volunteering?
I'm fine. I'll carry this here.
Okay. Senator Boquist has volunteered to carry.
I don't want the next one.
Senate Bill 292. I'll close the work session on
Senate
Bill
292. I don't want it, Lee.
And open a work session on Senate Bill 293. Erin.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 293 was originally heard on February 24th. This measure extends exemption from statutory gift limit to include admission provided to or cost of food or beverage consumed by a relative of public official who accompanies public official at reception, meal, or meeting. We have a no revenue impact statement and a no fiscal impact statement issued on the bill. We have no amendment before you today.
Okay, so members, we heard this one previously too.
The drinks for all bill.
And there's not much more to say about it. So although we do have the Ethics Commission in the room, if there are additional questions, I don't see any.
No.
Senator Farioli, do you feel a motion coming?
Madam Chair, I'm so moved to move Senate Bill 293 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved Senate Bill 293 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion on his motion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, motion carries. Senator Farioli, would you?
If I must, Madam Chair.
Senator Farioli has kindly volunteered to carry this bill on the floor. We thank him for that. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 293. Members, that expeditiously completes our agenda for today. Senator Boquist, did you have a comment?
I think I did pretty good. I'm carrying two bills, right? I volunteered
there you
twice.
Go. Yes.
Voluntold.
The record reflects that you did.
The most work we've done this year.
Yes, very productive.
He knows the House bill was the first one.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, everybody, for your time and attention. And with nothing further to come before us, members were adjourned.
I don't know.
Come before us, members were adjourned.
I don't know.